chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm excited to have Isaac Sokolic on the show today. Isaac is an author, speaker, digital transformation leader, and president and founder of Star CIO. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Well, Isaac Sokolic, thank you so much for making the time to be on the Something Extra podcast today. I am looking so forward to our discussion. You and I have some other discussions offline. And one thing I know for sure, you're going to give our listeners so much great content and ways of thinking about digital transformation and the digital landscape. And then the second thing I know for sure is we're going to have a ton of fun. We're going to have fun.
I love that. Transformation is hard work. So if you don't put the fun in it, you're going to burn people out. So it needs to be a conscious effort saying, how are we going to make this enjoyable? So we're on the ride together. We're stepping on each other's toes. We're doing things that feel unnatural. We're running really fast. How do we have fun doing this? I love that.
Yes, absolutely. And I want to give a shout out to our mutual friend, who I think the absolute world of, and I know you feel the same way, and that's Dan Roberts, for connecting us. I appreciate that so much. He's like, you two need to know one another. And he was exactly right, because I think we're going to do a lot more things together. But, you know, let me just kind of set this up for our listeners. So again, we have Isaac Sokolic on the show today. Isaac has been a CTO for several startups, the VP of Technology and CIO for Businessweek, CIO for McGraw-Hill Construction, global CIO for Greenwich Associates. He has written over 800 plus articles for publications such as CIO Online, InfoWorld. He's authored 2 books, and we're going to talk about that. He's got The Digital Trailblazer and Driving Digital. I have both of them here at my fingertips. He is a keynote speaker. He does over 50 events a year on digital transformation, the future work, and so many other topics. Wow. It makes me like tired just reading all of that, Isaac. But, you know, that is a lot. You have been a lifelong technologist, though, haven't you?
I have. I mean, it's was my passion. When I went to undergraduate school, I thought I was going to get an engineering degree and go into business. And then I discovered I'm pretty good at it and I like it. And so I went off into grad school and was excited to get hands-on my first few years out of grad school in industry. And I quickly pivoted into leadership roles. It was just like a couple of years out of grad school where I was already a CTO, which is a little bit more common these days. But back then people were head scratching and saying, Isaac, you look pretty young to be a CTO. And I was, and, you know, I had to figure out a lot of things on my own. And then somewhere in this journey, I said, you know what, I'm going to share what I learned as best as I can. And both of those journeys I've been on for over 20 years now.
You know, you brought up an interesting point because you pivoted to leadership pretty quickly. So someone above you saw things in you that they knew that you could lead well. But you know what's so interesting, Isaac? And I don't know if you had a different experience than I did, but you know, you don't get a lot of leadership training sometimes before you step into that role. I mean, I think that's an interesting point. We see that all the time with technologists. Sometimes we will see a technologist that is a rock star architect, and all of a sudden they say, okay, you're going to lead a team. Did you have some leadership training before you stepped into the role?
Not one bit. And the surprising thing was, you mentioned Dan earlier, he shared a statistic with me. So there's real data behind this that people report their first management training comes somewhere in their 40s. But we all know agile team leaders, scrum masters, DevOps leaders, you're leading a data science team, you're doing product management, all these functions and roles where you're transforming the organization. Even if you don't have people reporting directly to you, you're leading an initiative, you're trying to lead by influence, you're trying to drive transformation. How are people learning these things? And, you know, that's been a big part of my motivation going into my second book. It was looking at not just the CIOs who kind of get the importance of lifelong learning, right? If you're a CIO and you've been doing it for a long time and you understood data centers and you understood operations, but you didn't learn application development or you didn't learn how to manage data scientist teams, you know, it's really hard to stay current without that. You know, you come in and you're a little bit younger and you're leading an agile team, or you have a background in software development or IT operations, any one of those backgrounds, and you say, well, how do I really influence transformation when I own this slice of the pie? And, you know, you're right. It takes a lot of experience, confidence, and the ability to try things and say, yeah, I can actually do this. So I felt inspired by the group I was talking to around this, and that led me to write Digital Trailblazer to help them see the experiences that I lived growing up very early in my IT career into a CTO role. Sitting next to me, I write it in first-person narrative, and they get to feel what it's like to be in a big board meeting at the top of a skyscraper in Manhattan in your 20s when you're asked a very technical question by several board members and you know that I can't give them a jargon-filled answer. So it's a commitment knowing that you're going to make some mistakes and you're going to learn from them. You're going to continually build up your confidence, but you're not going to be afraid. I think that's probably the most important thing.
Oh, that is great. That's great advice. I love that. And I had several thoughts when you were talking, but I do want to move on. So you have already talked about kind of how you started, but I want you to take me back. I had Christine Miles on the show yesterday. Do you know her?
I don't. Isaac, I know her. I know her name. I don't know her.
Yeah. So she has spent her whole entire career, actually since she was 5 years old, learning to listen differently. And I would highly encourage our listeners to go and listen to that episode because she wrote the book, What Is It Costing You Not to Listen? And she also has a radio show and she has people on the radio show. And she said she always wants to know, what were they like between 8 and 14? And I thought that that was a very interesting question, you know, because somewhere in there was something that inspired you maybe to say, hey, I think I want to go this tech route, or maybe, you know, somebody in your family, or it could have been a coach or a teacher in school. Was there somebody like that for you, Isaac?
You know, there was, but not in a direct way. There's three things from that period that I'll share with listeners here that relatively few people know, you know. So when I think about 8 to 14, I was a geek. Okay. I was a Commodore 64 geek. I actually attribute that to my father, who said, Isaac, if you want to play video games on an Atari 2600, go and learn how to program them. And I took it to heart and I learned coding and I learned programming because of that. And my dad was one of my first person who inspired me to do that. I think the second story I'll tell from then was a friend of mine's father, who I'm pretty sure he was an electrical engineer. He was working for a utility company, but he also geeked out on all this new technology that was coming out, and he became a writer for a magazine. And I'd go over to my friend's house and he'd have all the cool gadgets that he would show off to us. And I think that bug of being able to write actually came from him, you know, and saying, okay, it was probably not something that he was going to get wealthy on, but it was something he was passionate about. He did a lot of, he had this whole organized system for dealing with it. So I give a lot of credit to him. And I think that's probably where the bug of writing came from. And I'll share one other thing. Getting up on stage and speaking in front of people, it's not a skill we're born with, as particularly when we're technologists, we tend to be more introverts. When I shifted, I moved to a new location in high school. I moved from Brooklyn, New York to Westchester County, New York, which if you don't know the New York area, they might as well be two different countries in terms of lifestyle. And I decided to leave some of my technology behind. I didn't want that brand when I showed up in high school. And I said, I'm going to do something different. So I learned to play an instrument and joined a rock band. And before I learned to play it well, I was singing in that rock band because nobody would do the job. And here's the big secret. I can't sing. I'm terrible at it. But I would go up and we would do these gigs, mostly for small crowds. And I would do it anyway. And so I think I lost my fear of being in front of crowds going back to those moments saying, if you can go do that with no skill, no capability, no talent, and you did it anyway, you know.
And you didn't die.
I didn't
you
die. Can, like I said, no fear.
No fear. That is such an awesome story. I've got now that just triggered a lot of other thoughts for me. We'll have to do another podcast for that.
I'm happy to do that.
I was telling somebody yesterday, you know, I do think that there is a link between music and technology too. There's a huge link there, right? We've got so many of our technologists that play the saxophone or play an instrument. And I really, there is one of the VPs of one of our big clients. I mean, she is a violinist and she has said it really helps her unlock the creativity in terms of problem solving. So there's probably a whole podcast there, Isaac, that we could do on that.
Definitely.
But thank you so much for answering that question. Those were awesome examples. So you've been recognized by Forbes as a top 20 social CIO, a top 100 CIO in STEM. And in 2014 to 2016, you were listed on Huffington Post top social CIOs. Why do you believe you were? What are the qualities that have helped you stand out, do you believe, Isaac?
I think when I look back to those years, those are the years that I could have turned around and said, you know, writing is something I did in startups. Sharing is something I don't have time for as a CIO. And I stuck with it. And it wasn't easy at that time. I actually got called up. By conferences to explain to CIOs what social media was all about and why they shouldn't be afraid of social media, where they should embrace it. But back then, it was you're sharing a trade secret if you write a blog post about it. Or if you're a CIO and you're out there in the public, you're going to get poached by a competitor and we don't want your name out there. And I did it anyway. I didn't ask for permission around it. Eventually, I had to ask for permission around it. I was very careful about how to anonymize my writing. So it was a best practice or a practice that didn't share anything around what we were working on at the corporate.
Yeah.
I was going with my instincts mostly. I was like, you know, someone said, Isaac, your startup isn't plugged into the blogosphere. So I started blogging and I just kept on writing around it. And then the feedback was very helpful to me. It's one of the lessons I share in Digital Trailblazer is if you just sit around a room, seven or eight people, and you know, nobody comes out with an idea that's wrong or a question that sounds silly. If nobody challenges things, you're not going to get that conversation going to what's the right answer or even what's the right question, right? And so I don't mind putting something out there that people want to challenge. you know, to this week, my blog post was, it's an old idea, but I think it's still worth talking about why CIOs shouldn't be reporting to CFOs. And, you know, I share that perspective because I'd been asked it a number of times over the last few weeks. I had never written about it. And I said, look, CFOs have a really important job functions. CIOs have really important job functions. I need the CEO involved when I'm trying to change the culture, when I'm trying to rewrite incentives, when I want the head of the company to cheerlead success so we get more people involved with what we're trying to accomplish. I can't afford to go through the CFO to be able to do that, right? I need to partner with the CFO, with the CMO, with the head of operations and say, we're equals at the table when we start thinking of the 50 things we want to go do. How do we boil that down to three things that really matter, right? And I want to have a bunch of equals at the table to debate that because it's not easy to prioritize anywhere.
Right. I am so glad. I didn't know you'd written that blog post. I am so glad you did, though, because I always say, no, the CIO needs to report directly to the CEO. I mean, they truly, I mean, it's not, it. There's financial implications to the technology roadmap in your organization. But really and truly, you cannot afford not to invest.
I think the big picture there is we talked the difference between digitalization and digital transformation and the difference between all kinds of transitions versus transformation. You know, I can't transform an organization by the returns just from cost savings. Can't do it. You know, that's not what transformation's about. It's about recognizing that in 3 to 5 years, your business model needs to evolve. And if we use the last 5 years as an example, you know, your business strategy in 2018 and 19 was around customer experience. It was becoming more analytical and data driven. It was about transitioning sales to be more digitally focused, depending on your industry. And then we hit COVID and that strategy changed. And now 2022, supply chain, war, sustainability goals, potentially
employee experience
because of hybrid working, yes. Recession. Yes. You know, these are now the factors. We have new technologies. I just did a couple of articles about metaverse in the industrial space. Now, it's early for that, right? The technology isn't ready for that. But in 3 years, do you have your data, your analytics, your experiences, your way of working ready to start implementing metaverse-like technologies, AR, VR-type technologies? It's going to be very different in a few years, and our models are going to change again.
Right, and we need to be anticipating that, right? Well, you brought up a great, I was going to ask you about this, and this is a perfect segue. You know, you talked about digital transformation being different than digitalization, very different. How do you define digital transformation? You've already told me a little bit how you define that. But, you know, truly, if you ask 10 different people, I think, what is digital transformation? You're going to get 10 different answers, most likely. But how do you look at digital transformation?
Yeah. Driving Digital, that my first book talks exactly about that. I'm looking at the business model through the lens of technology capabilities. Okay. And what that means is recognizing that the influence of new ways of working, of new ways of interfacing with customers, using technology and data to a strategic advantage, I'm going to want to be doing something very differently 2 to 3 years out from where we are right now. And I don't know exactly what that looks like. I'm going to evolve from that. I'm going to take feedback around that. But I know it's going to change my entire operation. You know, you mentioned Business Week. I was a CIO back then in 2007, and their recognition was what all magazines recognized, right? The revenue stream from print is dwindling. The revenue stream from digital needs to increase, okay? The ad models and what you can charge for an ad in print is very different than what it is in digital. We have to have a website, later on a mobile site that's competitive with startups that don't have the cost centers that require running call centers, running print publications, and so forth. We need to evolve that. But one of the most interesting transformations we had to work through was we had an entire sales team that knew how to sell $100,000 print ads. They didn't know how to sell $10,000 digital ads. And the incentives had to get adjusted. The skill sets had to be adjusted. The packaging of what we were selling, the value proposition had to change. And so I just described the entire business model of a magazine. And that's what transformation is all about. It's not that I'm putting up the website or building a new mobile site. It's I'm building my new business model around mixed media, gated content, subscription oriented, in a highly competitive world. That was, you know, magazines back in 2007. And if you look at where we are today, right, I don't think, you know, hospitals can look and say we can continue running how we work with patients and how we do billing based on how we've been running our business for the last 10 years. It's too expensive. We have people, not patients, people who want to take advantage of more medical practices, who want to take advantage of the data and analytics they capture on their smartphone and share it with their doctors in a responsible way so that they can get better treatment. Right? That's a different way of working. If you look at the last 3 years, telemedicine would have never happened the way it would have happened without a pandemic to really instigate that. So healthcare going to change dramatically over the next 10 years. Education, right? Higher ed, I did some talks with higher ed over the last few months. I said, you know what? Zoom education isn't going to work. We know this, right? If Zoom education was going to work, Udemy would put up one course for calculus, everybody would take it, and we'd be done with it, right? Save trillions of dollars in education. People learn differently. People have different ways of teaching a subject. The in-person experience and a digital experience is needed to accelerate, but also make it more affordable. And I said, look, if you look at what you're paying for college today, and are there comparable experiences that can educate somebody over the next 4 years? Somewhere in here, there's going to be a disruptive factor. It wasn't from the pandemic, because we know Zooms won't cut it. But over the next 10 years, we think about a metaverse education. As we think about more immersive experiences when you're in a classroom, somewhere in here, there's going to be a new way working with students, right? And so we're always transforming is my answer. That means transformation needs to be an enterprise core competency. We can't even think about what we'll be talking about transformation in 5 years, it'll be something else.
For sure. For sure. Well, we're going to talk about that. I want to talk about the future of work and, oh my goodness, so much more, but we do need to take a quick break and we will be right back with the Something Extra podcast with Isaac Sokolic.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
So welcome back to the Something Extra podcast. So Isaac, we were just talking about a lot of things with digital transformation and how companies need to be thinking about the future because healthcare is going to change. Education, we're already seeing that starting to happen. But, you know, you talk a lot about blue sky thinking, blue ocean strategy, that sort of thing. Where is our company today? Where and how do we need to evolve? I would love for you to talk a little bit more, dig into the future of work. What do you believe it's going to look like? What should organizations be thinking about? And then the last thing I'd love to tag on there is we need to be preparing our leaders of today to lead their organizations into this future work. So I know there's a lot packed in there, but I trust that you can cover it all.
I wish I could. I mean, there's probably 6 different answers I could give you to that, but I'm going to give you the fundamental one, which is, again, if you look at how we used to do blue sky thinking pre-pandemic, it meant once every 6 to 12 months, we'd get everybody in a room. We would have this big innovation day. We'd do all our blue sky thinking, and maybe 10%, 5% of it would leak out into something that we would go action, right? And then maybe we had another session where we brought startups in, or we had a vendor day to come in to go look at capabilities. And that's how enterprises were doing innovation. If a really good one would put up an innovation tool, everybody could put their ideas up, 100 ideas show up, 2 get done, everybody gets upset because the other 98 aren't done. I think that's, you know, the fundamental thing that's different about where we are today is we have to think about it more continuously. Right? How do we get and engage our key lieutenants, our high potentials, our salespeople, our marketing people, our technologists? This is not a single discipline function, but how do we do this on a more regular basis? Right? How do we bring people in and say, you know what? We need to pivot our next release of software that we've been planning for in that we think is going to come out in the next 2 months because we have a new opportunity that we got feedback from our end users that this is really what we need to focus on. You know, how do we have that conversation without the inefficiencies and the expense of having to do all this? And that to me is a big part of hybrid working and the future of work. Right. It's if you ask any employee, they hated that their calendar was filled with meetings every single week. You know, and I still see it. People show me their calendar. It's like looks like a fortress of blocks of meetings, you know, and I say to them, OK, let's talk about how do we unpack that? Right. Let's just talk about from a technology's perspective. We unwind the technical debt so that we can get into an architecture that allows us to move forward, you know, 50% faster. I think organizations have to think that way in terms of how they're operating. It's why I'm really passionate about Agile, because it means we're doing things in week to 2 week sprints. It means we're using feedback all of the time. It means that we're using cross-disciplinary teams, you know, to really home in on blue sky and future of work. I just think that there's too many things evolving too quickly right now. And when I think about future of work underneath this, I think about a few capabilities. I think about putting analytics and data in the hands of people, right? What we used to call democratizing data. But it's what we're really doing is taking what used to be an IT skill set, only IT could write SQL to get data out of a database, and saying, you know what? Marketing on average uses 120 different tools to do marketing automation in an enterprise. This is coming from Scott Brinker, 120 out of the 10,000 technologies in marketing. How do we enable them to make faster and more rapid decisions and let them be self-serving, right? So they can figure out week to week what experiments they're running. Just to share an example. So analytics would be a big part of that. Being able to build applications with low-code technologies, I think that's a big part of it. These are just some of the things that we couldn't talk about 5 years ago.
So good. So good. Well, we could probably, like you said, we could do a whole podcast just on that. Well, let's talk about Star CIO, because you founded Star CIO in 2016. You've done so much, Isaac. Seriously, I mean, this is probably, you know, everything that you've done is probably preparing you to do Star CIO, I would think. You know, all of that's rolled up in there. But tell me, what is it? What's your vision? What's your mission of Star CIO?
Very simply, you know, I think organizations want to take advantage of data and technology. They want to make it, you know, customer experiences as a competitive advantage. But we can't do what startups do in terms of the governance models, in terms of getting small teams to operate like a startup does. We don't want to go back to how enterprises were working with very stodgy, rigid ways of working. And we also can't do what, you know, the big tech companies do, the Netflixes, the Googles, the Microsofts. We're not tech companies. We just need a tech core capability. And so what we focus on is partnering with the leaders in the organization. We do it in 5 areas: agile, DevOps, becoming data-driven, low-code application development, and product management. These are the foundational practices that our organizations need to run transformation. And we help them evolve their practice in sprints every 2 to 3 months. We roll out new practices with them based on the priorities for that organization. And typically in 3 to 9 months, they're riding the bicycle on their own. That's how we differentiate. We don't plan on trying to be there forever. We're trying to teach the leaders how to really transform their organization and how to do that continuously.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. Well, I hope I have a lot of people that are listening today that reach out to you, because I know you're doing great work. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know we're running out of time here, but I have to talk to you about this, because every CIO, and I know that you're in that space too, Isaac, every CIO I know, talent is like the number one thing that is top of mind. How are we going to get the talent? You know, you have a son, Ronan, that we've talked about a lot, that from a very early age was interested in STEM and specifically aerospace. And I think he's at the University of Arizona right now getting a degree in aerospace engineering. But from a very early age, you know, he's been interested in this. What did you do differently with Ronan? How can we inspire more young people to even consider a career in STEM? Because I mean, you know this too. The demand is so outpacing the supply right now of technologists. We can't find the people. So what'd you do different with Ronan?
I wish I knew. I mean, honestly, I think he had it in him. I mean, he's one of these people that was taking things apart at a very early age and sometimes putting things back together. He challenged us all through high school in our thinking. One day he's in one side of the world of thinking about things. Sometimes he's on the other side. He was natural at it. I think your real question is, he's in that 20%, right? What about the 80%? Right? What about, you know, women in STEM? What about diversity in STEM? Okay. And I think it comes down to a couple things that we have to nurture. One is problem solving, right? You know, I think this is, you know, where our education when we grew up was difficult. We learned how to read books and answer questions, right? We need to give open-ended questions to groups of kids so that they solve problems, they come up with answers on their own. They make mistakes at a very young age. You see that in the education system. But we need to focus on problem solving, and we need to focus on creativity in general, okay? Where they're going to apply their creative skills. I did a talk at a high school in Queens, New York, a bunch of years ago. I still put that as the most challenging talk I ever did. I was not prepared for some of the questions they were going to ask me. And I tell the story in Digital Trailblazer. There was a chapter in it about diversity and forming your leadership team. And I talk about a high school girl who came up to me and said, "Look, Isaac, you're in technology. I like drawing animation pictures. I like, you know, being creative. Here's my scrapbook. But I know chances are I'm not going to be able to get a job in a career being an artist. How do I get involved in technology in such a way? What kind of jobs can I get in technology that let me use my expressive skills?" And you know what? I gave her an answer around that. And it's really important. They don't know the answer to that.
They don't know.
They don't even know to ask the question.
Connect. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you're looking for. And I tell her story in the book because, you know, someone who's creative like that, she could be a designer, she could work in user experience, she can work in business analytics and business analysis, she could be a facilitator. You know, you and I could probably think of 12 different ways she can get involved in a STEM career, but she knows zero. So I think those are the two things that I would home in on: problem solving and expressing creativity. If I added one more, Lisa, and this is the hardest thing for parents, get them off screens.
Oh.
Well, that's another podcast.
Let's do a podcast about that.
Yeah. I'm a failure
because it's a passive activity, right? You're not really learning you're using consuming. Your brain for problem
they're
solving.
They're learning, but you're not problem solving and you're not creative. Mm-hmm. You know, when you and I had 6 channels of TV in my house. I had, you know, one slow computer screen over a modern dial. It was expensive to either buy or copy video games back then. There's an infinite supply of YouTube, TikTok, Steam, you name it. You know, whatever their interest is, we know all the analytics to get them juiced up, right? We know how to do that.
Well, and as you were talking, Isaac, the other thing that I was thinking, kids need people that they can have conversations with that can lead and guide, just like you did the young woman that you mentioned in your book. So, oh my goodness, I could just keep talking to you, but I know you've got other appointments and so do I. So I have to ask you, Isaac, This is something extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
Every leader, and I do this in my talks, must recognize there's more in the day, week, or month that they need or want to do in their career that they have time for. This is the single biggest problem for CIOs and leaders, and it trickles down, right? We always have less time on our plate than what we want to do. And it's the single hardest skill for time management. This is a big reason why I think you mentioned talent and skills. We need to, as organizational leaders, find the talent and skills and time for establishing our trailblazers, our people who are going to really drive change, really drive transformation, not just have the skills and the technologies, but know how to handle a blow-up moment or know how to create a shock and awe moment or sell an idea to an executive. These are all skills that are experience skills, right? You have to live it and breathe it to know how to do it and have the confidence to do this. I think that's the something extra for people to really think through how they're going to address in their organization. We talked about this during the break, finding outside in learning experiences, right? Going to conferences, listening to podcasts, reading a book outside of your industry or talking to somebody outside. How did you do this in your industry? You know, an industry that maybe is leading yours or maybe one that's lagging yours. So I think it's really important. And Lisa, I promised I would leave you and your listeners with a bonus, right? So behind Digital Trailblazer is a community that we're building of digital trailblazers. And this is the first exclusive I am giving the URL to get access to that community. For most other people, they're getting it from the book. But go to my website, starcio.com/something-extra. Very easy.
Thank you.
starcio.com/something-extra. You'll see a sign-up page over there. You're going to get access to additional content and community behind Digital Trailblazer. For every chapter in the book, I've left 7 to 21 articles to go read about how to become more agile, how to become more data-driven, or how to formulate your leadership team, or what transformation is all about. So I hope people will sign up. I think it's really important, and that's my something extra for everybody in the group.
Well, thank you so much. I so appreciate that. So Isaac, oh my goodness, this has been such a rich conversation. Thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, hope to do this again soon.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.